I have two kids and a wife, so they're my beta testers for stuff. Like, they just suddenly get new software on their machines, and they're like, what the heck happened here? We don't know. My son's like, wow, what's this? It's like tiles and stuff. My wife is slightly less forgiving on paving her machine and installing things on it overnight. I'm sorry. No. No. She's like, all right. I'm sorry? Go yell at Tim or Uni. I think Uni is around here somewhere, so I would go yell at him on that. So how many of you are building Windows apps? How many of you are looking to build Windows 8.1 apps? Pretty good. How many of you already have apps in the store? Not bad, not bad. All right, we can start recording and stuff. So my name is Pete Brown. I work for Microsoft. I'm in technical evangelism. So if you saw the day two keynote with John Shushuk and Googs, that's my group. So we were holed up backstage since Sunday working on all that stuff. So we're really excited to show some .NET love and show some folks how to build some really cool apps, and certainly showing some interesting things on the 80-inch Perceptive Pixel display, which is something that I keep trying to convince people to let me have in my house, but nobody wants to let me have one there. But I'm still going to work on it. I'm also the author of my book on Windows Store app development, so please buy this. This supports all my habits. Or I can just say it feeds my children or something like that if you would like. Whatever makes you feel good, but please feel free to go and pick that up. What I want to talk to you about today is the end of everything else that's been covered this week. So you've probably been to a lot of sessions on how to build apps for Windows 8.1 or how to design apps for Windows 8.1, right? A couple of sessions maybe. What I want to talk to you about is once you get those apps in the store, like, what are the things that you should do to help promote those? Like, what are some of the things that we look for at Microsoft for figuring out if this is an app that we want to showcase in the store or showcase in TV ads or ads on any other video service or even like print ads, things like that. The things that are going to help draw attention to your app. So this is not a super technical talk. What this is really about are just the different types of things that we look for in those apps. And some of them may seem like common sense, but I know from helping lots of different people get their apps into the store that some of these things are just details that are very easy to miss or details that many folks don't realize how we use them internally. And so by providing that information to you, I'm hoping I can make it possible for you to get apps promoted much more easily. So we like to promote high-quality apps, right? How many people go and try to build an app and they say, I'm going to go build a crap app? Nobody? I'm hoping not. But we want high-quality apps. We want apps that people are going to look at in the store and say, wow, you know what? This makes the store better. This is an app that I want to use because it does something really spectacular. It does something awesome, and it looks really good. Those are the types of apps that we want to promote in the store. So here's an example of one of the types of promotion that we do. So this is an app called Fresh Paint. And this was in a video ad, which it was showing Surface, and it was showing just general Windows 8 stuff at the time. And one of the apps that was shown on the device was Fresh Paint. And it's because we felt that was a high-quality app. It was one of the early paint apps that was in the store. People were able to use it. In fact, there are several ads that show it, one with a capacitive stylus and stuff where somebody's painting on the board. So it's one of those things where we felt this was a quality app, and so we happened to just include it in some of the materials that we put out there. Similarly, like if you paid attention to what showed up on the keynote, there were different apps that were loaded on the machines doing different things. So we were very purposeful about which apps we load up on the different machines that show up on the keynotes, even if that app isn't the focus of what we're demonstrating. It's, because it's a partner that we've been working with, or it's an app that we've looked at in the store and we said, this is really high quality app, and we want to make sure its tile is on the desktop because they've been working with us and they've been creating spectacular apps. Of course, you know, we're promoting apps of all types. But of course, if you're a large company, you know, if you're a well-known brand such as Rovio or any of the other ones that that have instant recognition, we're going to have somebody working with you and help you promote those apps. So that's kind of a given. Like if you work for a company like that with a really important name like Foursquare or something, somebody's going to work with you for that. But for all the rest of us here, there's a lot of things that we want to work with you on to help it, you know, bring attention to your apps to make it more likely for those to be promoted. So let's talk a little bit about how you might plan for quality in your apps. Because it's not just about when you submit the app. It's really about from the very beginning of app construction, when you're thinking about what your app should do. From that point forward, that really sets in motion all the stuff in your app that's going to make it possible for us to promote it at the end. If your app doesn't have a really good idea at the beginning, it's probably not going to be a really good app at the end. So when I say something needs to have a really good idea, it needs to be best at something. You should be able to look at an app and say, you know what, this app is best at doing X. If you're thinking about this concept for an app, you're going to look at that and say, what is this app best at? But it needs to be something non-trivial. So for example, if I go over here to 7 for a second. I get over to my desktop. So here's an app, which I find amusing, right? So this app is best at being a cowbell, right? But that's all it does. It's just a cowbell app. So that's probably not something that we're going to want to promote in the store. It's kind of it's a really fun app to play with, but I can't imagine us having the big banner on the Windows Store like, get cowbell today, right? I mean, that's probably unlikely. But there are other apps where if you're doing something that, say, like makes music that are more non-trivial, right? This is an app that's not out in the store yet, but they're working with us, and they're best at being able to make it possible. You can kill the audio now. They're best at making it possible to create beats and create rhythms and stuff like that when you're on the road or when you're sitting on a bus or something like that. Let me stop this. Because as much as I like having the DJ background, I don't dance, so it doesn't really work out. So this type of app, they look at it and say, this app is best at being the app that you're going to use when you're sitting out there and you want to create beats on a single machine, right? You're probably not going to go to the cowbell app for that. So this is the type of app, because it's also well-designed, that we would be interested in promoting. Now, does this look like typical Windows app? No? All right, it's not two rows of boxes on the screen. It's not Sego UI on the top. There's lots of things we're going to talk about here today that are sort of part of that. But this is a highly branded app. Like, they're using their colors that fit with ImageLine's own branding. They're using their logos. They've kept things fairly flat. But it doesn't have to be a boring-looking app, and it doesn't have to be kind of two rows of boxes. So let me get back over to these slides here. What this app does is not just best at something, it delivers a full end-to-end scenario. So when you go in, you can create music starting from the very beginning, and you can complete that scenario all the way out to publishing that on SkyDrive or up on SoundCloud or any other place that you're interested in putting that app out to. So it's a full scenario from front to back. Again, the cowbell app, very cool. You could argue that's a full scenario, all the way from hitting the cowbell to making a sound, but it's, a trivial scenario. So we want to have these apps that are not super complex, but they do perform a task that the user is going to recognize as being complete and self-contained. Now, that doesn't have to happen 100% in the app. We'll talk a little bit here about how you can be part of the larger ecosystem with contracts and sharing and everything later. If your app has those things enabled and that completes the scenario, then we're also interested in that. So I'm not a designer. Anybody in here a designer? I know there's at least a couple of you. Okay. Only one of you is going to raise your hand, so I understand. There's at least a couple designers in here that I recognize. We have guidelines for design on design.windows.com. And I'll admit, we've been kind of iffy about communicating this over the past. Like, we have a really great site, but if you look at that as a set of rigid rules that you must follow to design Windows apps, all the apps kind of end up looking the same. And that's not really what we're trying to say here. What we're trying to say on that site is we have a set of standards that we want you to follow for certain types of interactions. We have a set of standards that we would like you to follow for the general look and feel and the fact that we're really focusing on content in the app and not having lots of extra lines and decoration and things like that. But we're not saying that all apps need to look like the start page in Windows. What we are trying to say is that your apps can be very highly branded and very brand forward, so you're able to express that through the app within the design language. So we've done a lot of work on updating this site, and you'll see additional updates here as part of the 8.1 rollout, for helping you figure out like what are really the core interactions and what are the core design styles that you should understand as part of being a Windows app. And then having somebody who is a talented designer understanding that vocabulary and that language and being able to then express the design of their company and that brand through that is really one of the best ways that you can create a beautiful and high quality app. So one of the examples that I have here, I went out and worked with several design agencies on building out some sample apps. Right, to show that you can express brands and you can express different design styles through through the Windows design language and still be a good Windows app. So this one here, this one's from G. Skinner. Sorry about that, guys. So this is an app that's Contoso Bar and Grill. And you notice everything here is kind of skewed, right? So the design agency looked at that and said part of the branding for this has to do with the colors and the skewing and whatnot. But what they also did is we still have things like standard app bars, right? The interactions are the same. You still flick down and flick up just like you would for any other Windows app. But then they've done some really clever things for how you would interact and how you would transition between the individual pages here. So you see they have kind of this swipe approach. Right, and this one happens to be an HTML and JavaScript app, but you could certainly do this in C++ or XAML or C# or anything that you would like. But I think this is a very beautiful design. And when we put this through our internal review process that is part of the whole promotion process, they agreed. They said this is a really beautiful and compelling design. It's consistent across from front to back in the app. It still adheres to the Windows standards in that if you flick down or flick up, the navigation is consistent with the way that we use the app bar. This is the type of app that we would certainly be interested in promoting if it provided a useful function to the users. Do you guys like that app? Yeah, so I think that's a pretty cool looking thing. And I will eventually have these all published and available so that you can see the source code and see how, and the markup and see how they've gone through and made these apps. So let me get back over here. I have another example here I'll show you shortly. But the point of that is you don't have to have an app that looks just like the Visual Studio template. If you put a little bit more work into it and you have a designer involved in it, you can really create some very beautiful apps on the Windows platform. Now, I did mention that the apps do need to follow the Windows User Experience Guidelines. So let's talk about a couple of those right now. So the first one is how you use the tile for the app. So I think everybody here knows that we have several different sizes of tiles. What we are looking for is if you are using a wide tile, we want to make sure that you're making that tile live. So there are several apps we've seen that have come through where the wide tile is just static content. In general, what we want is if you are using a wide tile, it needs to be live content that you're pushing through. It needs to be a live tile. If you have only static content, you're not pushing out any updates through that, then just use the narrow tile in that case, the normal size tile. And this works as well when you start looking at some of the new large tile sizes that we have in Windows 8.1. These tiles also should be ones that are surfacing active content to the user. The reason is we want the larger tiles that are on the system there to be ones that are helping to pull the user into your app and helping to add to the value of the desktop. So a really large tile that's just a static image with your brand on it doesn't really add to the value of that start page, and it's not really helping the user out. So use the smaller tiles in those cases. And we have two different small tile sizes now. We have the normal tile, and then we have the one that's a quarter of that size. Another part of this is making sure that your tile sizes, or the tiles that you provide, are crisp and clean. So how many people here knew that you could provide different images for different DPIs? about a third of the room. So it's especially important now because we're having lots of different new devices come on that are very high DPI. So you know, the smaller the screen and more pixels that you have on that screen, generally the DPI goes up. So if you're looking at a 13-inch screen and it's 1920 by 1080, then that has pretty decent DPI. But then if you bump that up to 2048 by something, then the dots per inch, the DPI goes up. Now, if you don't provide images which are native to that DPI, then we stretch them for you. But by stretching them for you, they become a little fuzzy, right? And this really shows up if you're looking at things like app bar icons or other user interface elements where you expect really nice crisp edges on those elements. So we have built-in support for that. And since about half the room here I see hasn't seen that, let me just quickly show you where you can set that up in Studio. All right, so if I go into Visual Studio here, and if I go to the package AppX manifest, and I go over here down to the bottom to my image assets, you'll see that, let me go to all. We have spaces for you to assign or to provide all the different DPIs that we support for your images. Now, I recommend that when the designer is doing this, you're not just going to take one large image and just keep resizing it down. In most cases, the designer is going to want to optimize that image in whatever program that they're using. And everybody here has a year's worth of Creative Cloud now because of the keynote announcement, so there's no excuses. You should be able to do this in Photoshop or whatever. You're going to create optimized versions. And for example, the lines might be, the same size across all of those as opposed to a fat line in the big one that's been resized all the way down to a very narrow and fuzzy line in the smallest one. So again, the designer is going to look at that and optimize for each and every resolution that you support or DPI that you support. And also by default, starting with Visual Studio 2013, we now provide the default images using that naming convention. Now, what's interesting about this naming convention that we have here is it also works just in code and markup. So any place in your app where you're referencing images, if you want to, say, reference that logo, scale-100.png, all you do is you reference logo.png in the URL or in the code, and we pull in the correct one, -scale100, -scale140, 180, et cetera. We'll pull in the correct one based upon the DPI of the screen that's being displayed on. All right, so we've done a lot there to make that pretty easy for you to do. And I would encourage you, just because, again, like how many of you are users of other tablets where there was early on in days, there was just phone apps that were scaled up to the larger tablet size, right, without mentioning any brand names here? So early on, you saw they were just scaled up, and they all looked terrible. I mean, they very quickly folks had to go through and redo their apps for those new sizes. It's the same thing here. We just don't want those apps to look terrible on these larger sizes. And Windows has an unprecedented number of different types of DPI and different screen sizes and stuff. So by providing this to you, we've made it, again, really easy for you to be able to support that in your apps. The other thing that you want to look at is how your content flows and how it pans across the screen. So this is also from a design agency I worked with. They've created a really cool app here, which is for sports. And they've done some interesting things with the way that it pans left and right. Right? So in general, with the Windows form factor, we're looking at panning left and right as opposed to scrolling up and down on our platform. So think about how your content should pan and what you want to show on that main page. And consider when you're building something like a main or a hub page, that main page has everything in it that is appropriate to your app. That is the app in this case. Right? Think of that as your app, not just a menu to get into that app. When you switch to vertical scrolling as well, you also need to be pretty cognizant of how that's going to work. So if you're, say, swiping left and right on there and there's a vertical scrolling section, you need to make sure that interaction is going to work correctly so that it doesn't, catch. Like when the user is just scrolling through there and they accidentally grab that when they're scrolling, it doesn't catch and start scrolling vertically and prevent the rest of the scrolling there. So make sure when you're going through these apps, when you're coming up with these navigation ideas, you're testing for those types of interactions. So that one that I was mentioning there where they're catching on that is one that some of the agencies that I worked with found out pretty early on because they would do design with the mouse at first, And so they were just doing interaction there where they would scroll left and right with the scroll bar. But then when you're designing for touch, you get a very different interaction where, again, where your finger touches on there to pan is different than where you would pan with on the mouse. Okay, and this one actually is a design by NV Interactive. Let me show you that app too. So I think it's a very cool looking app. So this is a sports app that they designed. Again, I think it's a very cool design. But if you look at this, in this case, I'm gonna pan with the mouse. This machine here is not touch. But when you scroll left, you see it fades in the background. But they've done some interesting things to make sure that the content is interesting over there. And they've also bookended the design so that you know you're at the end of the panning region because there's an ad at each end of that, right? Which is a typical thing that you might do. So if I go all the way over to the right, you see here's the image of the story, and then we can also go all the way back over to the right again. So again, really interesting design. This one also happens to be HTML and JavaScript, but they created a similar version of this for Windows Phone for me, which I'll release, and that's C# and XAML as well. How many of you attended sessions where you saw stuff on the new windowing model in Windows 8.1? That's cool. I'm going to make you all exercise to burn off the drinks from last night, I think is what it is. So the new windowing model in 8.1 is different, obviously, than what we had in Windows 8. Right? So Windows 8, you had snapped view, and you had the filled view, and then you had the full view, right? So we don't really have the same kind of snap view anymore. So when you're designing your apps, you need to make sure that they will work on anything larger than 500 pixels and up, right? So this, again, sounds pretty easy, but since we didn't have this in Windows 8, it's easy to make assumptions in your app that if you're below, let's say, 1024 by 768, you think you should be using a snap mode layout, right? So make sure that your apps aren't making those types of assumptions, and they simply scale the content appropriately. Now, as design professionals and as developers in the room, it's going to be up to you to figure out in that app, when do you switch to, say, like a vertical scrolling as opposed to a horizontal panning? Like, at what resolution does that make sense? We don't provide a whole lot of guidance around that because that's a very app-specific scenario. But again, you can think about the stuff that you've done for, say, portrait view. And the fact that these windows can be taller than they are wide means that the same types of ideas that you might have applied to a portrait view navigation will apply if you're, say, at 550 pixels wide or something like that, and 768 or 800 pixels high. So think about that as you're designing this. It's, again, a little bit different from what we've had before. And it's something like in Windows desktop apps, we've never really had windows that were taller than they were wide. So it takes a little bit more thinking to get your head around that. Now, what that does enable is if your app supports that really well, it enables you to play nicely with all the other apps on the screen and support some really interesting scenarios with side-by-side apps. When you're doing that, you want to make sure that you reflow the content when it's resized. All right, so this one, I had opened up a link that was in email here. All right, so when I resized that center, because now, again, it doesn't snap, it's a fluidly resizable thing. Notice how not only the image size changes in the news story, but also the text reflows, and it becomes more vertically oriented as opposed to more spread out. Okay? So your apps should be smart about how they resize. And if any of you have been designing web pages, forever, unless you're one of the folks that always had the web page was fixed at 500 pixels wide and that was it or something, like you've already been doing this kind of fluid layout in your web pages, and you're going to apply the same types of techniques to Windows Store apps. So let's talk about some other kind of more hardcore standards that we have. When Windows 8 first came out, we had the top app bar and the bottom app bar. And it really evolved over time so that the top app bar became the navigation bar. Like more and more apps, it became pretty obvious that that was the right place to put full app navigation in the app. So we formalized that with Windows 8.1, where the top app bar is now the navigation bar. Right. So we're expecting that when you're using, when you're creating any kind of navigational elements in your app, ways to get to the hub page, ways to get to different sections, that you're putting that inside that navigation bar at the top of the page. And then your individual commands, including the context-sensitive stuff, are all going to show up on the bottom. Right? So that's a standard that we really look for. So even if you're being super creative with the layout of those, and even if they're skewed and stuff like we saw before, we still would like you to follow that standard where navigation is at the top and commands are at the bottom, because that's just an essential thing that users are going to look for. Now, of course, that doesn't prevent you from putting commands on the canvas of the app itself. If you've taken a look at some of the photo editing stuff that we have in 8.1, you'll see that in many cases we have commands that are directly on the canvas because that makes sense there. It's part of the typical action that the user is going to perform, so keeping them right there and visible is fine as well. Having the stuff on the bottom app bar is for things that the user might want to get out of the way so that they can take a look at the content that's on the page. But sometimes they need to do an action like, say, save a file off, or they need to send it to somebody else. For those, they're going to flick up, invoke the command, and then move on. Okay. Another issue that we saw during a lot of reviews is positioning of flyouts. So when you have a command on the bottom of the screen, and you tap that command with your finger or your mouse, the flyout that comes out of that pop-up, should be right there, right next to where your finger is, because the user should get to it right there. We have seen some where it tends to like have a flyout come from the right, and especially in the new windowing model, that gets really kind of strange, and you don't want to do that. But at the same time, it requires the user to like refocus their context, where they started here, and like, oh, now I need to go up over here and do something. So commands at the bottom, we would really like you to go and have the flyouts right there on that same spot. Now, I spoke a little bit earlier about navigation. And probably one of the biggest things that we look for in apps is consistent navigation. So whatever navigation pattern you pick, and we have some standard ones that we recommend, but again, ultimately, as the app developers and designers, you need to do what makes sense for your app, right? As long as it's consistent. It can be a flat navigation pattern, it can be a hierarchical navigation pattern, but as long as a user can look at that and say, okay, I know how to navigate around this app very easily, and it's just intuitive. We're leaving that up to you to figure out. And again, we have some patterns that you can follow, but you just need to be consistent about that. So, of course, you can follow some of the standard app bar design stuff, where you have a hierarchical layout where the hub is represented as well in the app bar, so that each of the hub sections brings you to a subsection, and then also each of the app bar, the navigation bar icons also brings you to one of those sections. But you don't have to limit yourself to that. That's just a really easy one to follow if you're interested in doing that. So if you have a typical hub layout, and I hope many of you have seen that we have the new hub control in Windows 8.1, right? So that's something that's certainly helped in this area. But if you have this typical kind of hub layout where you have a main page, and then section and detail, again, the consistency of that navigation needs to be that you can get to that section from the main page, and you can get to the details from the section. You don't need to provide navigation to every single detail from the top from the navigation bar on the main page or anything like that, right? So again, consistent and logical navigation across that. And the reason I emphasize this so much is this is really probably the biggest thing that we look for in apps. You know, beyond the fact that your app needs to do something useful, once you're in the app, the user needs to be able to figure out how to get around in it without going off and having to scratch their head or read a manual or something like that. If a user has to scratch their head and figure out how to navigate your app, they're probably just going to stop and just like throw it away at that point, or give you a one-star review, the waste of my $1.49 type of review that you see out there. So you want to make sure that they can navigate around cleanly and consistently and easily. And a big part of that is the back button. So it can be very frustrating when you're going through apps and you see that the back button kind of jumps around from location to location. So we expect that the back button needs to be in exactly the same spot on every page, so that if the user wants to get back several times, they can just go tap, 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 and it just will get them back several pages in there. So if you're off by a few pixels or you're off by quite a bit, that's something that we're not going to want to promote an app that does that, right? So if you look at this from navigation standpoint, it's consistent navigation, hopefully using the navigation bar as a big part of that, and then the back button being consistent across the pages. All right, so those are the really big navigation elements. Now, I mentioned earlier that apps don't need to have every last thing, every last bit of functionality directly in them. We have a system by which apps can provide value to other apps. So last night I was talking with a company who is interested in building some APIs that are storage APIs into a larger storage system that's very, for a specific industry, but it's a storage system that they wanted to make available to everybody. And they were talking about what kind of APIs do I create? Is it RESTful APIs? Or, am I doing C++ components that people can reuse, et cetera? And I thought about it for a little bit after we had discussed their stuff. And I thought, well, why don't you just provide an app, right? Provide an app in Windows, and then make it possible so that other apps can share to that app, make that app a file picker so that people can load and save directly from that app's storage, right? And make that app searchable as well. And that provides all the stuff you would need. If you think about how SkyDrive has done it in the past year, that provides all the stuff that you would need to be able to interact with an external file system somewhere without anybody having to change their app's code and without anybody having to provide additional APIs that are specific and having to recompile and all that kind of stuff. By providing an app that does that type of functionality, that exposes that data to other apps and can also be a place where people can store that, you provide value to all the rest of the apps in the system. So if you think about, say, something like Facebook, right, or something like Twitter, anybody here know what the next big social network's going to be? No? Nobody's? We're all short on crystal balls today, I guess. Nobody knows really what the next big social network is going to be, right? Maybe the 14-year-old in school probably knows, right? But I don't know. So that the next big social network is going to provide an app on the Windows, right? And that app is going to be something that every app that can already do sharing and stuff can access without having to have known anything about that social network or that that interesting endpoint from day one. It's automatic. So what I have seen on, say, like, think about web pages. Like, you get a lot of web pages, they have, like buttons. We all have the web pages that beg stuff. It's like, please like me, and please tweet me, and please all this stuff, right? So all those different buttons there, when there's another new social network, you have to go in and modify your page code and make sure you add another new social network and stuff in there. We have built-in support in Windows so that you don't have to go and modify apps and add these different buttons and these links to these specific endpoints. Use the sharing mechanisms that we have and become part of a much larger system. I know I'm very happy when I see apps that I can share to or that I can get data from because it just increases the way that I can use those apps. It's sort of like the much more modern version of the old piped stuff that we used to do back in the 80s, right, where you could just pipe from one app to another. So this is like a much more refined version of that. So now I want to talk a bit about some of the things that have to do with submitting your app. So I think a lot of the stuff that we've talked about so far, if you're a design professional, you're looking at it going, like, yeah, I kind of get all that. That's stuff that I do as part of my job. Thank you very much, right? But then there's also stuff here that is part of the submission process that I think a lot of folks miss out on. So for one, submit awesome screenshots with your app. Is a screenshot of your splash screen an awesome screenshot? No, it's not. Your settings page? Probably not, right? But I know a lot of folks go and they do that. And they're like, all right, well, I'm going to capture a bunch of screenshots. So here's my splash screen. Here's my setting page. Here's the login page. Oh, and also four screenshots in, this is what my app actually does. When you go into the store and you look at apps in there, you don't want to see people's screenshots. You can kill this other mic that's over here. I'm not using that anymore. Let me go into the store here for a second. And let me get back home. So that screenshot up there for Twitter, for example, that's pretty obvious what it does, right? You instantly recognize that that is some sort of a way to interact with other people. It has messages and whatnot on there. Say, Temple Run Brave, it's not a business app, right? I immediately understand what that is. And I'm not going to talk about each and every one of those. But each of those apps provide... each of those screenshots provides some useful information about the app. Now, what you don't need to do, you don't need to have just screenshots as your screenshots. So especially when we're talking about the first image that you submit, you can decorate that with your brand and have it say something more about you. Think of it more as, back when we used to buy software in stores where you had the box and you had screenshots on the back of the box, right? Those screenshots, you had all the screenshots there, but the box was highly decorated and had some really cool things about the brand, and it had, you know, the nice text and everything around that. You can do that in your apps. Like if I go here and look for, where's my Mickey? And if I look at the screenshots for this, their screenshot is actually better than blank, but I see, appear to be having some, there we go, some network stuff here. The actual app itself is just that box in the middle. Like all that other Chrome and stuff isn't part of the Where's My Mickey app. But if you are a kid or somebody looking at this, what do you see in this picture? Seriously, nobody saw Mickey Mouse in that picture? You guys suck at Where's Waldo, I'm pretty sure. So there's Mickey Mouse there right in that photo, right? Right? That's not part of the app itself. That's just bringing some of the branding forward because people are going to identify with Mickey Mouse in that. So in your own apps, you can bring that forward and provide that decoration as long as you're still showing, you know, what your app actually does. But bring that branding forward as especially your first screenshot when you submit that. And that first screenshot that you have is the most important screenshot because that's the one that when people visit your listing online here, when people visit that in the store and also on the web, that's the one that they're going to see first before they move on to anything else. So you want to make sure that that is the one that you have, not your splash screen or something like that, but something that brings your branding forward. Now, we've always just had, you know, here, submit your five or, you know, X number of screenshots. And we didn't really tell you that that first screenshot was that important. So that's what I'm telling you folks. That first screenshot, super important. Okay. All of your other screenshots beyond that should show interaction with whatever product that you, you know, that you're selling folks, right? So each unique bit of functionality, each thing that you would want to show somebody to figure out how they should use your app or why they should use your app, why they should get it, should be in the additional screenshots. And you could submit lots and lots of screenshots, right? Submit as many as is appropriate for your app. But again, think like a marketing person when you're putting those up there. Now, we also use, or if we're promoting, we may also use this first screenshot as part of the app promotion. So also think of it that way. So that first screenshot may show up, you know, in the top app section of the store, in the promoted apps, like when you first go into the store and you saw those different, like Temple Run and other apps flying up there. This screenshot is used there, right? So provide that, in, you know, provide that top quality screenshot that shows your app in action as well as your branding information right there. We also have these optional promotion assets. I want to tell you, they're not optional. If you want to get your app promoted, submit all those assets with your app. So those promotional assets are just different size tiles that we ask you to provide that gives us other options for how to promote your app in the Windows Store and also in other places. So again, these are also very marketing-oriented images where these aren't necessarily screenshots. They could certainly include screenshot information, but this is more cover art type stuff. So even on the smaller ones, you're looking at logo and information, and the larger ones, you're looking at more, again, more branding as well as more information about the app itself. There is no actual change in promotion asset sizes from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. We're doing the same type of things. And if you can only submit one of those, then submit that top one I mentioned there, the 414 by 180. But please, I encourage you, when you submit your app to the store, use all of those. Because it's really hard for us to promote your app if you don't have great screenshots as well as these optional promotional assets. So when you do add these promotion app tiles to your, you know, to your submission, the small and medium-sized tiles, you know, we want something that's going to show the brand, right? Something that users are going to immediately identify with, right? And then the larger size tiles can do more with screenshots and things along those lines. And we have a bunch of different tile size. We have 2x2, 2x1, 1x1, etc. This stuff is all, when you go and submit your apps in the Windows Store, you will see this. Now, that's actually a good point to bring up at this point. You know, you can't currently submit apps for the Windows 8.1 store, You can continue submitting them for Windows 8 Store. But the types of things that I'm telling you here today, even though some of the specifics of some of the assets, like some of these new sizes and stuff, are different, all the other information completely applies to Windows 8 apps as well. So same thing with your first screenshot being some great marketing information, all the stuff about how you do navigation, et cetera, those also apply to Windows 8. So the next thing is writing a great description. So I've seen some descriptions in the store which are okay, and then I've seen some where obviously a good copywriter got a hold of it and said, hey, this is the how we want to present our app. So think about, you know, when a user comes to the store and they're looking for an app, they're going to see your screenshot, right? Their eye is probably going to go and see the rating and maybe the price, and then they're also going to read your description. And that description should provide them the maximum amount of information with the minimum amount of effort on their part. And it should be well written. And despite a conversation I was having with somebody online the other day, spelling does count, right? So make sure that your spelling and grammar and all that stuff are all good, because you want to, you know, promote a professional appearance for your app. Don't include a bunch of like asterisks and other stuff in there, because that just kind of messes up the way that we display that, and it looks really bizarre to people. But make sure that you include information like, if it's a free-to-play app, like, people should know that. Like, they should know that there's probably some more. As a parent, I would want to know that if before buying an app for my kid. I would want to know that it might cost me X number of dollars down the line. You should describe very succinctly what your app does. It's preferably in the first sentence or two, because that subset of that, those first couple sentences, are what we're going to show in the Windows Store if your app gets promoted. So make sure that you have that good statement about what your app is best at, like going all the way back to what we talked about at the beginning. That best at statement should be really what your description starts off with. If your app has a trial period, make sure you describe exactly what that trial period is. Like, nobody wants to download an app, install it, forget about it for a couple of days because I had to go do something, and then find out the trial period was one day, right? So make sure that you mention in there the trial period is 30 days or one day, or it's limited functionality forever, or you can pay to upgrade. All of those are very important details that you want to have in there as part of your description. Now, the description can be pretty long. So if you think about it again, here's my best at statement. Here's some other cool stuff that you want to know about my app. And then here are all these other details. It's free to play. It has a trial period that's 30 days, et cetera. All those sort of go further down below. Don't be deceiving in your description. Only describe what your app does. Don't describe what you want your app to do. I mean, how many of us have done that talking to our managers? We're like, well, what this project, when it's done, is going to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, what does it do right now? Well, it does X, right? So in the store, when you're submitting your description, make sure you only submit X. And in fact, that's not just a promotion thing. We'll fail in certification if you say it does X, Y, and Z, and we can only find X in there. Another important thing for your app description is to make sure, again, that you're very truthful in its capabilities, but also that you don't reference other apps that are in the store, whether they're yours or not. So you don't want to say, my app is just like Angry Birds, right? And you don't want to say, hey, this is one of our suite of three other apps, including X, Y, and Z, because we don't want anything in there that is marketing for any other app. We will actually reject that during the certification process. Now, with the new Windows 8.1 store, we've made this. Like, people used to do that because there was no way to see related apps or other apps by the publisher in the store. But now we have that stuff in the Windows 8.1 store. If you flick to the right, you'll see other apps by the same publisher. So there is actually no reason for you to do that anymore. Okay. And again, I mentioned avoid those special characters. One exclamation point is cool enough for any given statement, et cetera. So a couple of app description examples. I'm not going to read them to you. But you see, they read just like what you're best at. Another very important piece here is to support every architecture. All right? That includes ARM, x86, and 64. And the reason for that, so first of all, a lot of the Atom processors are only x86 compatible, right? So that you have to support x86 if you're targeting Atom. 64-bit is what most of us are running, and then, of course, ARM for Surface and some of the other tablets that are out there. The reason this is important is not only because we want to make sure there's a unified experience across all of those, But if you think about like a TV spot, remember, we're not talking just about the store here. Your app shows up in a TV ad, and somebody's like, wow, that's a really cool app. I want to try that out. And they have a Surface with Windows RT, and they go looking in the store for that app, but they don't see it because you don't support Windows RT. That's a bad experience for that user. They don't realize what happened wrong. They assume it's not in the store yet or something's messed up with that. So support every architecture if you want your app to be promoted. Very. So the question is, do you need to submit different versions for each? And that depends upon what you're coding in. So if you're doing JavaScript or C#, and you're not using any C++ components, you can submit in any CPU package, and that'll take care of that for you. If you are doing C++, or if your app uses a C++ component, then you have to submit as part of that same app three different packages, right? And it's quite easy to do. In Visual Studio, you'll just build them all, right? And then you'll submit them all together just on that same page. What you don't want to do is you won't submit three different apps. You'll submit three packages for the same app. But for most apps that don't have any C++ components, and the reason C++ is the differentiator here is because C++ code is compiled in CPU-specific way. So there is a 64-bit version, a 32-bit version, and an ARM version. So if you're using those, then you do need to go and push those out as separate packages. The other thing that's really important is trial mode. So this is not something that's essential, and certainly we do promote apps that don't have trial mode. But if you have a paid app, and especially if you're not a well-known brand, supporting trial mode increases the conversion rate and the download rate by some very large numbers. Right? I'm sorry to be vague there, but it's something that shifts over time. But those downloads are significantly different for people who have trial mode. Because there are lots of times where I go into the store and I see an app, and it's $4.99, or it's $1.49, or whatever. And I think, you know, I don't know this company, and I've seen the screenshots, and it looks like it might work, right? But I don't know that I want to spend that money on something without trying it out first. So trial mode is really easy to support in your apps. You can do the most basic mode of trial mode, which is basically just go in and in your listing you say support trial mode for X number of days, and then there's nothing else that happens. You don't even have to change any code. You just automatically support trial mode. Or you can do a much more robust version of that, which is my preference, where you support trial mode, but your app is helping the user with that conversion where when it's coming close to the end of the trial mode, it's saying, hey, you know, this is about to expire. Click here to go and purchase the app through the store. Or it's doing things like selective disabling of things when the trial mode is over. So it's like they can still load it and run it, but they're encouraged to, you know, buy additional levels or go on and purchase the rest of the app, et cetera. So those still aren't a whole lot of work, and they are very easy to support. So again, if you're building an app that is something that you think might be promotable and something that you're hoping will be popular, which I hope all of us would build with that in mind, then support trial mode. Right. And there are lots of different ways to do that. We have guidance on dev.windows.com and also design.windows.com where we explain different ways of approaching trial mode. And certainly you can also look in the store and see how other people are doing it as well. One of the things that I don't recommend you doing is submitting separate paid and trial versions of your apps. Submit one app and make sure you have this all together because it's a much better experience. You as an app developer, you know, your stats and everything are going to be tied to a single app. So you want to make sure that you're maintaining that information about downloads and conversions and purchases and everything through a single app. But also from an end user doesn't want to uninstall one app and install another. Any friction like that really hurts adoption and hurts conversion for purchasing your app. So if you do have separate paid and trial versions of the app and you're looking for promotion, we would probably come to you and say that you need to unify that into a single app. Also be age appropriate. So anybody can look in the Windows Store, right? We're not going to put 16 plus content in a promotion image and have that up on a page. We need to be appropriate about what's shown there. So as cool as it might be to have the zombie's head exploding on that one game that you're putting together, presumably it's game. I mean, it could be an interesting business app. As fun as that might be, don't put that in the screenshot, right? Because we need to make sure that the screenshots are kind of family friendly. Right? In addition, like anything else that you have, when that app is first run, if you want the app to be something that we can promote, then you need to use content filters. And what content filters are is a way in your app through a setting or through some other mechanism of saying, hey, this app is 16 has 16 plus content. Do you want me to turn it on or do you want it to be left off? You know, some sort of settings for the violence or whatever might happen to be that 16 plus content in there. We're going to look at that and try to make sure that when somebody looks at that app and they download it, that they're not seeing 16 plus content right away. And this is something that a lot of game developers and a lot of other folks might think, oh, I didn't realize that. And it's, if you think about the family-friendly nature of the store and the fact that we don't gate people on age, we provide age information, but you can purchase stuff and parents can purchase stuff for their kids and everything. You need to make sure that experience is the right experience and they're not suddenly just getting some really crazy things right down from the start. Similarly, we're not going to promote, kind of like really unfamily friendly stuff, right? So I mean there's 16 plus stuff, but there's also like there are games that can be hyper violent and everything, and games is like one of the only categories where we allow that kind of adult level of content. Generally we're not looking to promote any of that stuff in the store. It just doesn't give the right kind of vibe to the store when you get in there. So finally here, just a couple minutes left, I just wanted to say, help us help you, right? So start off by making really great apps. Make sure they're really good at something. Make sure they're best at something. Make sure you're submitting an app that's not in like a really crowded category. I don't know that we're necessarily going to promote yet another calculator app, right? Make sure that your apps are nicely done. Find a friend who is a designer and call in a few favors if you're not a designer yourself. Maybe you can help them with some coding and that designer can work with you a little bit on upfront design. And then think about your brand. So a lot of you are probably just individual developers just looking to build apps, but you still have a brand. You may not realize it, but you have your own personal brand, and the apps that you put out in the store become part of that brand. Like, how many of you contribute to open source projects? Excellent, excellent. That is part of your personal brand. That's part of your internet presence, right? So it's also something that you can put on your resume. Same type of thing with building apps. It's part of your personal brand. It's part of something that you're going to put out there that's going to represent you, and you want the best possible apps out there representing you. Because someday somebody is going to search on your name, and they're going to find your app, and you want to make sure that they look at that and say, wow, this person must be an awesome designer or an awesome coder. They just did a really great job on this. Okay? I'll be around here for a couple of questions here at the end, but other than that, I'll cut you loose a couple minutes early here, so thank you very much.